Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week, this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your family. We will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way we can make a positive difference together. Now, my guest co-host today is also making a positive difference in the lives of young people. Paul Otis is the associate head of school and science teacher at Lake Tahoe Preparatory School. He received his master's degree in teaching from Sierra Nevada College. And Paul has a passion for providing students with inquisitive ways that allow them to experience science firsthand. As an avid rock climber, trail runner, and skier, he enjoys exercising in the outdoors and sharing his love of the outdoor sports with students. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Alan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure. And before we get to our guest, I want everybody to know that I am grateful to all of you that take your precious time to listen to or watch this show, and especially those that are sending in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions. Remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. Now, a quote, although not from the journal, "The young have the same problem, how to rebel and conform at the same time. They have now solved this by defying their parents and copying one another." That's by Quentin Crisp. So, Paul, please share with our audience a little bit about Lake Tahoe Prep and the kind of students and families that are really a good fit for your school.
Sure. Thank you, Alan. You know, I think that kids who have slipped through the cracks in a large public school classroom or a large private day school classroom, kids who might be disenfranchised at home, but who really enjoy daily activities, getting outdoors, outdoor adventures, such as skiing, snowboarding, rock climbing, biking. We have a tremendous amount of outdoor activities that we like to take our students out to do. And I think the common thread for a lot of our students and for a lot of our families is that slipping through the cracks. It might be a light learning disability, some light substance use, some kind of trauma in their past. But the common thread is kids who have slipped through the cracks along the way, or maybe had a stumble. We would take kids who have spent some time in a therapeutic type school or program. We would take students who have done a wilderness therapy program. But we would also take undiagnosed, untreated students from home who are looking for small class size, a small staff to student ratio, a lot of daily activities, and a lot of adult interaction.
Well, as someone who had one of his own sons go to a school that also had a much smaller class size, a greater teacher to student ratio, I saw incredible changes and incredible growth. And what they realized was is that that was just the type of attention that he needed to thrive. And I'm very proud to say that since that time, he has recently graduated from the University of Hawaii, where he was accepted into because of the fact that he turned everything around so well. So I'm one of those parents that can say that for the right child, those types of changes can be huge.
That's great. I think a lot of times students really can feel lost in school. And we provide the kind of environment where students know everyone that they encounter throughout their day. Everyone's going to greet them with a smile. It's not the kind of place where students spend a lot of time on social media and spending a lot of time on using technology. We prefer real world interaction with a small class size. And we really focus on those campus connections from student to student, student to staff, and staff to staff. Our sense of community is really what makes our school shine.
Well, I love that. Now, Paul, if for those that have additional questions for you and don't want to wait until you come back as our guest in July when we're going to go much deeper, what is the best way for them to get answers?
Certainly. Well, our website is www.laketahoeprep.org. There you can take a virtual tour, see pictures of our student body. It'll answer a lot of the questions that you might have. You can also fill out an online application. There you'll also find our phone number and a map to our website. We would love to have you come by and do a tour with us and see what we have here.
All right. Well, thank you. So stick with us as we get more information in regards to our guest. And for those that haven't figured it out, we're going to be talking a lot about teens and the issues that they're dealing with today. And I have some statistics that are somewhat alarming. According to the National Institute of Drug Abuse, 20% of teens admit to taking prescription drugs without a prescription. Last year, 47% of American high schoolers admitted to using illicit drugs, and 58% saying that they consumed alcohol, and this is according to the American Addiction Center. And remember, those are just the ones that chose to admit to it. So our guest, Richard Capriola, is the author of The Addicted Child, A Parent's Guide to Adolescent Substance Abuse. And he has worked as a mental health counselor for 21 years, including 11 years at the nationally ranked Menninger Clinic in Houston, Texas. During his tenure there, he worked in the Adolescent Treatment Program and the Adult Comprehensive Psychiatric Assessment and Stabilization Program, working closely with psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, and nurses. He was responsible for comprehensive assessments and individual group counseling with patients diagnosed with substance use disorder. Richard, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure to join you and Paul here today to talk about this this topic. And I appreciate both of you being here to join in on this conversation, which affects so many families across our nation.
Well, it certainly does. And if you can share a little bit more in regards to your background and when you decided it was time to put all of this down in a book and share it with the rest of us.
Well, I started out with a career in education. I was an administrator for the State Board of Education in Illinois for almost 32, 33 years. And towards the end of that tenure, I started working part-time at a mental health crisis center, which was a regional crisis center in central Illinois. And I noticed that a lot of people who were coming from the emergency rooms into our crisis center also had a substance abuse issue. Mm-hmm. So I returned to the University of Illinois and obtained a master's degree in addictions counseling, continued to work at the crisis center for a period of time until I was offered the position at Menninger Clinic in Houston. I was offered a position as an addictions counselor for both adolescents and adults. And I worked for Menninger for 11 years, retired a little over a year ago. And after I retired, I set about to write this resource for parents, this addicted child, this handbook. And also a parent workbook that goes along with it that is devoted mostly to helping the parents. So many times I would sit across from parents, and after I'd go through their history, their child's history of using a substance and give them the diagnosis of a substance use disorder, they would look at me and they would say something like, "I had no idea this was going on." Or if they did suspect their child was using a substance, they would say, "Well, I sort of suspected something was going on, but I didn't know it was this bad." So I wanted to put together a resource that would give parents the basic information, the education, without you know, compiling it in 200 or 300 pages because parents don't have time to sit and read a lot about this or to go through a journal. So I wanted it to be very concise, very much straight to the point in average, common, everyday language. And I wanted to deal with critical issues like how drugs work in the teen brain, an overview of the drugs that are out there, what assessments are important for a comprehensive diagnosis, how to process disorders like eating disorders and self-injury. How do they sometimes coincide with a child using a substance abuse? And then I wanted to give parents warning signs.
Well, and what are some of those warning signs? What are some of the signs that parents should look for that can indicate that their child may be abusing drugs?
In my book, I have warning signs on alcohol. I have warning signs on marijuana use. I have separate warning signs for a child that might be involved with an eating disorder or might be self-injuring. So those are all separate type of warning signs. But in general, what I recommend to parents is pay attention to the changes that you see in your child. You know your child better than anyone. So pay attention to the changes that you see. Don't assume that the changes are just normal adolescent acting out. They may very well be, but they also might be an indication that there's something else going on underneath the surface. So for some examples would be a child who was earning very good grades. Now the grades are declining. A child who used to enjoy participating in sports no longer wants to participate in sports. A child who used to be very social and outgoing now becomes very isolating and very quiet. A child who used to introduce you to their friends, you knew who their friends were. You might have known who their parents were, now becomes very secretive of who their friends are. So these are all warning signs that parents need to pick up on and investigate a little bit further to make sure that there's not something going on underneath the surface.
So, and Paul, what would you add to this as someone who's also working directly with some of the parents? What are some of the things they're bringing to you when they're talking about what their young people are going through?
Well, I think that I think you were nailing the nail on the head there. I think that there's always something under the surface. There's a reason. Kids aren't turning towards drugs just because is presented to them. There's generally something under the surface. There's a reason that they're going to say yes when they are encountered with that choice. And so I think it's really important for you to address what the underlying cause, root causes are before this becomes a problem on its own right, where now the drug is calling the shots and the addict is calling the shots.
Exactly. So Richard, what steps can parents take right away once they believe that the problem is there or that they recognize it?
Well, I think the first thing to do is have a discussion with your child and see how open they are to talking about this issue. Now, that's a discussion that's likely to go one of two ways. It's either going to blow up and the child's going to be very defensive and argumentative. And that in itself is good information to have. Or the child may actually reveal some information. You know, I've worked with an awful lot of kids who were smoking a boatload of marijuana. And when I asked them to help me understand why they're smoking so much marijuana, the number one answer that came back was, it helps me with my anxiety. So I think the first step is to have that discussion with your child. Regardless of how it goes, the next step is to get the assessments done that I've outlined in my chapter on assessments. Certainly, you need an addictions assessment. That's what I was doing at Menninger. But you also need some other assessments. You need a good psychological or a neuropsychological examination assessment to see if there is anything going on underneath the surface that you need to be aware of. You need a good physical exam to rule out any physical complications that may go on. So you need to get these comprehensive assessments, which are really the foundation for a treatment plan and how to move forward.
All right. When do you think it's time to seek professional help? You know, after you've had that conversation with them, and depending on how it's gone,
the sooner the better. The sooner that you can get these assessments done and you can get the professionals to do these testing and the assessments and you can get a diagnosis and a treatment plan, the sooner then you will have information on what the next steps should be. Every child is different. There is no one, you know, one plan that fits all kids. A lot of it is going to be driven by not only the substance use and the severity of the substance use, but the underlying conditions that are going on too. Many of the children that I worked with, because they came into a psychiatric hospital, were looking at longer-term treatment programs, many into a residential type setting program, but each child is different. And that's why it's so crucial to get these assessments done and to get that professional treatment plan pulled together. So as a parent, you know what your options are and you know what the next step should be.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Richard, so many times, I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead.
So many times I find that it's helpful to remove students from the home environment in which they have not been successful. Yeah. How do you make that determination, whether a student can remain in the home environment and continue to do work about their substance use, or at what point do they need to be removed from that home environment?
I think a lot of it depends on a number of factors, certainly the extent of the substance use. There's a big difference between a child that might just be experimenting with marijuana and a child who has moved into chronic daily use of marijuana and perhaps has combined it with either alcohol or maybe some other illicit substance. And the other component is the underlying psychological issue. If you have a child, perhaps, where you're seeing an emerging personality disorder, perhaps an emerging schizophrenia disorder, or you have a child who has a severe self-injury issue, they're cutting on themselves a lot, or they have a very serious eating disorder that accompanies the substance use, or you have a child whose underlying depression or their anxiety is so severe that really the best treatment option for them is to refer them to a longer-term treatment program or some type of residential program. Then you might have a series of kids that are just so oppositional that they're not even interested in treatment. Those kids more likely are first going to go to a wilderness program where they will hopefully get prepared to move on to the next stage of treatment. So again, it gets really back to that comprehensive assessment so that you get the complete picture of the child. That's going to lay the foundation for the treatment plan.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you.
Now, I get the impression you're talking about now it is the fact that oftentimes the drug and alcohol abuse is a secondary issue, and that if you go in and you approach and you work with the primary issue being more of a mental health issue, the secondary issue is not going to be the problem anymore if you can deal with that first primary issue. Is that kind of where I see you going?
They're both issues that both need to be addressed. It's not going to be helpful for the child or the family to just treat the marijuana use if I can't help that child's high anxiety level or if I can't help their depression. I have to treat both. And if I were just to treat the substance abuse, I may be able to curtail that child's substance abuse, but that anxiety ultimately is going to push them to relapse.
Yeah, and that's my thought too, is that it's just going to show up somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. It'll show up either in another way to medicate that underlying issue. It may develop into some other type of disorder, like an eating disorder, or it might switch over to self-injury. But kids are no different than adults. When we have intolerable thoughts or intolerable feelings or memories, we want instant relief. And the instant relief, unfortunately, can be found in a lot of these illicit substances.
All right. We have a question that's coming in. It says, what do you think is the role of schools and teachers in recognizing a student's addiction? I presume they report to the parents when their child is misbehaving, but is there anything else they can do? Do laws prevent them from intervening?
I think the role of the school can be an essential component to addressing this entire substance abuse issue among our adolescent population. I don't think we're doing it in the most effective way right now. I think a more effective way is to focus on the neuroscience of education. To help these kids understand the need to protect their developing brain, to begin that neuroscience at a very early age in elementary school, and then to reinforce it every single year all the way through high school. When I was working with so many teenagers, you know, it didn't do me any good to tell them the drug was illegal. It didn't do me any good to tell them they might get bad grades or drop out of school or never go to college or never get a job. They didn't believe it. But what did capture their attention was the neuroscience. They were interested in the science, so that when I could show them the various areas of the brain and what they were responsible for, and then I could show them where marijuana affected those areas, that captured their attention. Mm-hmm. I think the role of the school, aside from education, because it's a very good question that came in, I think the role is for the school counselors to become actively involved in these issues when they see it in a child. Maybe they're referred by a teacher, maybe they're referred through some other source. But the counselor's role is to get involved in those situations where they suspect a child is using a substance. Bring the parents into the process, because the parents need support and the parents need help too. But I think that's a very crucial role that the school can play and the school counselors can play in this situation.
So fortunately, with Paul, we have a science teacher, but between the two of you, can you guys explain a little bit for some of the listeners what some of the neuroscience data that can be produced that can help make the decisions necessary?
Paul, you want to take that one?
I would certainly, when it comes to the marijuana firsthand, I would speak to the amotivation syndrome that you see along with a lot of teen marijuana use, where you get the point, you have an underlying type of mental health issue, right? That is probably not causing that student to, be really outgoing or be passionate and motivated for success at this moment. And we're willing to turn to a drug. And now we've got a drug that's it's really helping to keep us on the sofa and keep us, I guess, from gaining any kind of motivation to get out in the world and to be active or to seek out those social relationships. So I see it as entirely destructive. And, I agree with everything that Richard said. I think that the school can get involved right away. The type of school in which I work, with a small class size, with a lot of that adult interaction, that takes a holistic approach to educating kids, we see these things pop out. We see the change in the mood. We see the change in the behaviors. And when we're working closely with that student and that family, we can get down to root causes before these types of things are allowed to fester for a long time. And then that dabbling in substances becomes daily and problematic.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that Paul just said. When I was working with these kids who were using a lot of marijuana, they would readily admit that their motivation just wasn't there. It sapped the motivation out of them. But I also noted a few other things as a result of the psychological and the neuropsychological testing that was done on these kids. And they were smoking a boatload of marijuana. First of all, their IQs were all above average to superior. These were very bright kids. But the processing speed of their brain was below average. Mm. Their short-term memory was impaired. And their motivation, as Paul just pointed out, was just not there. So, this drug, marijuana, is affecting their brain, which is in the process of developing in the first place. But we could see some pretty remarkable changes in the processing speed of the brain and their short-term memory as a result of all of the marijuana that they were smoking.
We are talking about The Addicted Child, A Parent's Guide to Adolescent Substance Abuse. We have with us the author, Richard Capriola, and I have as my guest co-host, Paul Otis of Lake Tahoe Prep. So we're going to take a break. For everybody out there, stay with us. You're listening to Answers Network. And this is where we
founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis. Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers Network. We are talking about the addicted child. And Richard, with the drugs of choice changing with each generation, what substances are teens most using today?
Well, they're still gravitating towards marijuana and alcohol. Those are still the two primary substances that seem to be attractive to today's adolescent population. There is some use of other illicit drugs like LSD and cocaine. Certainly prescription drugs are involved in there, but on a percentage basis, they're much smaller than the percentage of adolescents that are drinking alcohol or using marijuana. But what we have noticed in the last few years, which is different, is a surge in what's called vaping of substances. This can be either vaping of nicotine or vaping of marijuana. In the last 3 years, the percentage of high school kids that are turning to vaping is just exploding. An example is that 3 years ago, about 18% of high school seniors were vaping nicotine, 18%. Today, it's more like 34%. 3 years ago, 9% of high school seniors were vaping marijuana, 9%. Today, it's 22%. So we've seen an explosion of vaping. Now, the reverse of that is that cigarette smoking is at an all-time low. But kids are moving from smoking cigarettes to using nicotine through vaping, and in so doing, getting higher concentrations of vaping as well. Mm. And there was a study done by the University of Rochester Medical Center that looked at both adults and kids who were vaping, and they reported a difficulty in concentrating and remembering. So both adults and adolescents reported concentration problems and memory problems. And they also reported that kids who started vaping between the age of 8 and 13 were more likely to report difficulty concentrating and remembering than those who started after age 14. So this vaping is becoming really an issue. And for many parents, they're unaware of it. Many of these vaping devices can be easily disguised. They might look like a pen. They might look like a USB drive. So even teachers sometimes are unaware of what students are doing. But there's no question that vaping is becoming a major issue out there among this population.
And what about the things, I think they're referring to them as whippets or poppers, which is the nitrous oxide?
Yeah. Those tend to be what in a classification that we call inhalants. Mm-hmm. And generally, that tends to unfortunately occur at very young ages, mostly because many of these substances are readily available around the house. So adolescents who are very young can often, unfortunately, get exposure to some of these inhalants. I've had older adolescents, and I've even treated some adults who were using the Whippets, and they were going through hundreds of cartridges of these things. The problem with the adolescent population is, you know, these inhalants give you a very rapid but not long-lasting high, so a kid will likely use them repeatedly, and they can be very toxic to a young developing brain.
Yeah, there is legislation out trying to ban these, or at least in these stores, you know, where they're selling them to minors, openly selling them to minors, and to be able to change that. So for any of you parents out there, when it comes time to vote, find out where that politician stands on these things, because that's important that we get these out of the hands of kids, or at least to where it's not so easily gained. And in many cases, the answer that kids will get is, well, it's legal. I can buy it anywhere, so it can't be that bad. Well, it can be that bad. And so we need to get that information out as well, as much as possible. We have another listener question that has come in. And when I was asking about some of the drugs, I've been really kind of shocked that we've had this resurgence of heroin. And this particular question says, a week ago, my 16-year-old grandson was arrested for possession of heroin. My daughter and her husband are beside themselves as they had no idea this was going on. They had recently taken him to the doctor's office thinking that his lethargic attitude was from a mild case of COVID the family experienced last month. The doctor found nothing and sent him home saying he just needed to rest and de-stress. I just purchased your book for them as they are confused about what to do next to help support him before he enters mandatory counseling and drug rehab. Can you talk about situations you have encountered like this? And this is from Gloria in Mississippi.
I think that raises the issue that although most of the kids that I worked with were either drinking alcohol or using marijuana, not very many of them were in the harder core drugs, although I did have one very sad situation where a girl had been introduced to an opiate by her boyfriend and was also pregnant. But I think that brings up two issues. The need really to get a really thorough, comprehensive assessment. Many times we might start with our family physician, but we need to go a little bit deeper sometimes. We need to get the full range of assessments, the psychological, the physical, the addictions assessment. Those all need to be combined together. But it also raises the issue that you may have a child maybe that starts with marijuana, but they can very easily in a very short period of time transition over into harder core drugs. And the signal to parents is you need to get on top of any suspected substance abuse as early as you can. Get these assessments done. Find out what's going on, because it can very, very rapidly escalate on you.
And Richard, I've had some parents that were disheartened by the success rates with rehabs and other therapeutic programs. What can you speak to that? Why should parents continually pursue rehabs or other therapeutic interventions for their children?
Well, because of the treatment that's needed, and the trick always is to find the right treatment for the situations that are involved with the child. And in my book, I have a series of questions that I recommend parents ask any treatment provider so that they get the information that they need to make good decisions. And I think also when I was at Menninger, we referred a lot of children to treatment programs. Many times what we were focusing on is what's the best treatment program that can treat that child's underlying issue, because that almost became primary. So if you have a child who has an eating disorder, you want to send that child to the best eating disorder place that you can. They'll know how to treat the addictions part of it too, but you want to focus on getting that treatment for that underlying issue and finding the best treatment for that problem that you can. That's probably going to be the key. Unfortunately, a lot of parents, you know, are misled into thinking that a 30-day program might solve all the problems. That's usually not going to be the case. Unfortunately, it's driven by insurance more than it is the need to provide good service. But each child's treatment plan is going to be different. There may be some children that can do very good with outpatient treatment, maybe once or twice a week. There'll be other children that can do very well in intensive outpatient treatment. And then there'll be a set of pupils, children that will do very well in an extended longer term program. We know from the research that the best outcomes generally are after a minimum of 90 days of treatment. 90 days of treatment generally, and that's a minimum, generally gives us better outcomes than just, say, a few weeks of treatment.
Yeah, I love the fact that you touched on find the right one. That is, to me, huge in this. And the the detective in me is starting about 10 or 12 years ago when the laws changed. We were hired to find information in regards to some of these programs that started popping up. Based on a new law, they were popping up. They were, they called it patient brokering and things like that. So for any of you out there, I mean, there are educational consultants, there are professionals out there that you can talk to that go around and they know who the good programs are. They've been working with them for years. So don't get discouraged if you have a situation to where you ended up maybe at a place that wasn't that wasn't able to take care of the situation.
Yeah.
There are really good people out there, but there are also professionals that can help steer you to the right one.
I'm glad you brought that up, Alan, because I do address that issue in my book of education consultants, because I want parents to understand that there is help out there. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be the expert on all of these programs, and it's going to be overwhelming when you get the diagnosis and you find that your child maybe has a severe substance abuse issue or perhaps has an underlying mental health issue. And where do you go and what do you turn to? Some of the professionals that did the assessments might be able to give you some recommendations, but we used education consultants a lot in the adolescent program at Menninger because, as you pointed out, they're the ones that many times have visited the programs. They also specialize in matching the program to a child's unique needs, which can be very powerful. So I'm glad you brought that up because that can be an important resource for parents in terms of matching the treatment to their child.
And how do parents go about finding educational consultants nearby or within a particular specialty?
There's a website. I think I've got it listed in my book where parents can go into the website for the Education Consultant Association, and they can find education consultants by either geographical area or by the type of disorder that they need treated. So there are resources out there from the education consultants that will allow parents to narrow that field down and get a number of recommendations.
Yeah, in fact, that association is called IECA, if you want to Google it. And for those of you driving, don't try to write any of this stuff down. I'll make sure that that's also mentioned on our website, on the answers.network website, how you can reach an independent educational consultant. Now, I've got another question. It's, I've heard from parents who have, they've moved out of the city, they've moved into the suburbs, or they've moved to a smaller town in hopes of taking their teen out of the environment that they believed would keep them from doing drugs. Well, generally, if they're telling me this story or they're telling me about it, it's because it didn't work. Yeah. So how do you believe parents can best protect their child from abusing alcohol and drugs, and probably starting with communication?
Well, no child no child is totally protected. Right. There are protective environments, but no child is totally protected. It doesn't matter whether you live in the inner city or you live in the suburbs. It doesn't matter what your income is. It doesn't matter what your religious preference is. All children are vulnerable to being captured by substance use. So what can you do? I think the best thing that you can do, starting at an early age, but even at a later age, is to begin to develop that solid foundation of communication and trust with your child. When we ask kids, what is it that keeps you from talking about your issues to your parents? What is it that keeps you from doing that? The number one answer that comes back is a fear of being judged. They fear being judged by their family, by their parents. So I recommend that parents, regardless of the age of your child, because it's never too late to start, begin to develop that solid communication with your child. So what do I mean by that? Well, we're pretty good, Alan, at being able to listen to other people's words when they talk to us. So when our child is talking to us, we're pretty good at hearing the words. We're not so good at hearing the feelings behind those words. Mm-hmm. And that's a skill that every parent can practice and can develop. I put that in my parent workbook. And as you practice it, and as you begin to become better at it, you will start to experience a communication system with your child where you're not just hearing their words, you're hearing their feelings. And when that happens, that child will begin to believe that you truly do understand what's going on. Now, that's not going to happen overnight. That's going to take practice, and it's going to take some time. But it might be one of the best strategies that you can use to steer your child away from potential substance abuse.
We have another question that came in. And again, I appreciate those that take their time to send these questions in. This one reads, the teen drug issue and suicide rate are increasing around the country, and I attribute much of it to this continued fear-mongering by politicians and the major media outlets, as well as the restrictions that are in place on us. Many kids are stressed out, depressed, and doing poorly with their studies. As a teacher, when I try to talk to them about it, I often get a doom and gloom, why bother attitude. I feel frustrated and angry, like many of the parents I talk to who say, I don't know how to fight this huge negative propaganda machine. I ask all three of you, what do you suggest we do? Richard, you like to start it off?
I think that raises a very important issue that we're seeing among the adolescent population, and that is the effect that this pandemic has had on the mental health of adults and children. Mm-hmm. And I think, unfortunately, we are just scratching the surface. The Center for Disease Control, for example, has reported that since the pandemic began, there has been a 24% increase in emergency room visits by grade school children. These are grade school children. And over a 30% increase among teenagers who are urgently in need of mental health care. This has disrupted families, it's disrupted education, it's disrupted adolescents. It's affected their sleep, their eating patterns, their school performance. It's involved excessive worry, irritability, sometimes aggression, and it's, I think we're just scratching the surface of what we're beginning to see. And there's a lot of things feeding into that, but just the pandemic itself and how kids and families have been so disrupted, I think we're going to deal with this mental health issue for a lot longer. And I think that we're also going to begin to deal with it as children start to reintegrate back into the traditional classroom. That is going to be difficult for a lot of these kids, and therefore it's going to be difficult for their families. But it's like a crisis that is slowly simmering and developing is as we emerge through this pandemic and kids get back to the regular classroom. It could be difficult for a lot of kids.
And Paul, what's your thoughts on it? And what have you seen with the kids that you're working with in your school?
Well, yeah, I ditto exactly what a lot of Richard said. I'm seeing a lot of middle school students who are now coming to us as early ninth graders who basically are missing those prerequisite social skills from eighth grade. I'm seeing a lot of students in ninth and 10th grade who are relatively immature, who have missed some very important prerequisite skills in a lot of their academic classes and are really almost stunted emotionally, socially, and academically. I think that there is a lot of trauma going on behind closed doors with this pandemic that is going to be deeply seated later on. And I think just the same way that adults are reaching for Netflix or alcohol or another way to numb out and tune out, kids are doing the exact same things. And so I have seen parents and families coming to me with pretty straight edge kids who are starting to turn towards vaping or some marijuana or some at-risk behaviors. You know, I think that we live in Lake Tahoe and a week of snow days is tough. A month of snow days is awful, but we've had a year of snow days. And, you know, this has just been bad for everybody. And, you know, I'm hoping to see a lot of schools and teachers going back to teach those social emotional skills in the classroom and going back to do a lot of prerequisite skills that were lost on kids tuning out during Zoom.
Well, and I third exactly what both of you have brought up. But so I think a different twist to add to this is for parents, turn off the negativity. Don't repeat it. Don't repeat it on social media. You know, turn off the network news. Turn off anything that is choosing to bring nothing but negativity into yours and your child's life. When you're listening to children that are talking about nothing but doom and gloom, well, guess where they're getting it? So let's get away from those things and focus on the things that are more positive. There are so many things that are incredible. And Paul, I love Lake Tahoe, and I think that you guys have the right idea in the sense that much of what your education is based on nature, and it's based on being out amongst the weather and the nature and things and exercising and doing outside things. Keeping your kids indoors is going to be the worst thing that you can do now, be it a virus or not a virus. So if I can add that part to what the great things that you've already added, let's hope that that can sink in. And we actually have another question that has come in, so let me get that one out because we're running short on time. And this one reads, I'm an 11th grade teacher, and from the data that I have been assembling, there are thousands of parents who are asking doctors to prescribe antidepressants and other drugs for their kids to try to fix them. As you so rightly state, the first steps must start with the parents. So I applaud you for dealing with parents of addicted kids. But do you also have answers for parents who may think that drugs are the way for kids who are not on drugs already? And that's from Aaron in Arizona.
Well, Aaron, that's a very good question. I think under the right conditions and under medical supervision, many kids can benefit from some of these prescription medications. Certainly, a lot of kids are prescribed Ritalin and Adderall to help them, and they can be very beneficial. But all of these prescription drugs come with risk. And my advice to every parent is, first of all, if you have any type of substances in your house, it doesn't matter if they're prescription or if they're over the counter, you need to secure those. You need to make it very difficult for your child to have access to them because they will get to them. But the question of whether or not prescription medications can be helpful, yes, they can be helpful. They can be helpful for adults. They can be helpful for children, but they have to be under the right conditions and they have to be under adequate medical supervision. The warning for parents is be careful because these substances can be abused by either the kid who it's prescribed for or they can be taken out and sold to other kids. So you need to be very careful with any type of medications and alcohol too, right, that's around your house, because they will get into that as well.
Oh, yes. Gentlemen, unfortunately, we have run out of time. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here. Any last words that each of you would like to share?
I would just say to any parents that are out there that one of the things I wanted to accomplish in my book was to give them a sense of hope, education and hope, that there is treatment, there is successful treatment for your child. There are resources out there. There are good programs like Paul's that are out there. So there is hope, and there is a way through this for both your child and for yourselves. And the second message I would say to parents is, when you're going through this, if you're going through it, get help for yourself too, because you will need help as a parent. And many of these programs have very excellent programs for parents. And I would encourage you to take advantage of those parent programs as well.
I would reiterate that it's never too early to get involved to prevent drug use and addiction. And it's never too late to get started to try and fix your kids' problems. Never give up. And like Richard said, there's a lot of resources out there. There's a lot of people that are ready to help you. So don't try and do it alone.
Thank you so much to both of you for coming on. Richard, I want to honor you for taking the time to put together a book like this. I think it's very helpful and I highly recommend it to any parent. Paul, again, appreciate you coming on. And for everybody out there, if you have more questions for Paul or you want to learn more, he's going to be back with us again in July. We're going to have plenty more time. But in the meantime, we'll also have information on both of these gentlemen on our website, answers.network. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. For everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we are joined by Gabriel Cousins to discuss his new book, Into the Nothing, A Spiritual Autobiography. In this interview, Gabriel shares his absorbing personal journey of awakening, highlighted by an extraordinary rich revelation of miracles and mystical adventures, as well as profound teachings and insights on sacred relationships as a path of liberation. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network or subscribe to our show through iTunes, iHeart, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, BeatYou, YugiTube, and many other popular podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. And for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.